This is RÚV English Radio with Darren Adam, daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, RÚV.
Hello, this is RÚV English Radio. I'm Darren Adam. Thanks very much for your company. Today I've come to a place the smell of which hits you as soon as you walk in, but that's not an insult in any way. And to get a sense of what I'm talking about, let's speak to Eva Maria Sigurbjörnsdóttir here at the Flokki Distillery in Garðabær, which has just opened. It's just after 10 a.m. open for visitors. Did you get many this early in the morning?
Surprisingly, yes, we do. I always think it's but people are on vacation.
Yes.
Then they will come in early. Sometimes you will have Icelandic people coming in because they are getting birthday gifts or something like that, because we are finally allowed to sell on site.
So yes, and that's a big change, isn't it?
Oh, that was a huge change. Came in 2 years ago that we were allowed to sell on production site.
Yes, because as you may know, in Iceland, as in some other Scandinavian countries, and I think Canada, you have to buy alcohol from the state alcohol store here in Iceland, except if you are a distillery such as this and you've got the right to sell.
Yeah, so the distilleries, you have to apply to have the right to sell. And then also most of the small breweries outside of Reykjavik, they will have this license as well, so they can sell you straight on site.
So when I came in here and I had that smell straight away, you can tell that it's a distillery, but what am I actually smelling?
Right now you are mainly smelling, because he has opened up the wort stills. So, or wash stills, sorry, wash stills. And then you are going to smell the kind of overcooked barley porridge that we make that has been fermented and then distilled once. And that is basically what we're smelling now, because we are now emptying the machines and running them again.
Right.
So that is the most distinctive smell that is right now.
Very ripe smell, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, we're in the main part or the front part of the building. There are lots of wooden barrels up on the shelves here. And as you said, there are items on display, including some of the products that you make. Gin as well,
yes,
we should say, is also sold here. I think gin is what you make first, isn't it, on the way to making whiskey? Is that right?
Or is it
the other way around?
It is, in a way, it's the other way around.
Yeah.
But a lot of distilleries will start by producing gin, because gin is something you don't have to store in a cask for 3 years. So you can sell it right away.
Okay.
And our first plan was we were only going to be a whiskey distillery. And then we're like, okay, let's do gin as well. So we have something to sell while we're waiting for the barrels. We managed to get an award in 2014 when we released it, where we got double gold in San Francisco Spirit Competition, meaning we got top 10 gins of the world in 2014. And this is our first product that we're releasing. That gave people kind of confidence in that we knew what we were doing. It also gave us the confidence that we were not totally out there and shouldn't keep on trying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, still having you. Congratulations on that. Let's wander into the part of the distillery that people can see. And as we do that, when you get visitors here, as I'm sure you do from other whiskey producing nations, the UK, Japan, what do they make of this? Because this is the only distillery in Iceland that's making whiskey, isn't it?
Yes, we are. There is another one, Thoran Distillery, who is also somewhere in the process of making whiskey, but he is mainly now producing gin.
Okay. So at the moment, this is the only place that's making whiskey?
Yeah, it is the only
and,
place.
I mean, does it taste Icelandic, kind of whiskey connoisseur tell? What's the difference?
So the biggest difference is that we are only using Icelandic barley or Icelandic rye. And that gives really different flavor profile. So probably we are using barley that tastes more is what it should have tasted like 100, 150 years ago in Scotland. Because we have only been able to grow barley for the past 35, 40 years in Iceland. So we have to use really different varieties than what they can use in Scotland and in Germany or in Sweden or in Finland. We can't grow the same varieties. So we have really different base flavor profile.
So the differences in those crops really makes a big difference to the flavor of the whiskey.
Huge difference.
Okay.
Just huge difference. We had to learn to work with it, of course. And that was our main focus to begin with. We wanted to use Icelandic barley. We wanted to figure out a way to give farmers another way of income.
Yes.
So the farm would be more sustainable. And also we didn't want to import export, because most of our products that we are producing actually goes for export. The Icelandic market, we're just too few here. So about 90% of what we produce straight in export.
And you've got that novelty, I suppose, at least for the moment, haven't you, being the only whiskey producer in Iceland?
Yes, we do. But then also, we have been doing this for the past, what now, 10, 11 years. So now people know us, and they are still just waiting. We are learning more and more about the barrels and the process and everything every day. So,
yeah. Okay. Well, we've come in, as I say, to where all the action is taking place. There are big metal cylinders on either side of me. There's what looks like a very old-fashioned piece of machinery. It's a tall bronze still. It looks quite old.
It's 10 years old.
It's only 10 years old.
It's only 10 years old.
It looks classic then, I should say.
It looks classic, yes. Yeah. So this is our main still. We named her Elizabeth after our grandmother. So we have named all of the machinery after someone in the family. But Elizabeth is named after our grandmother. And this is our main spirit still. So first we have to ferment, then we do the first distillation, which are actually old milk tanks that we changed over to stills.
Okay.
And then we do the main spirit still. Even though she looks old, we actually did put automation on her. So she can run on her own. But we do take the cut points, but that means she can cut off on her own. She can finish on her own. We don't have to stand here and wait until she finishes.
It all looks quite steampunk in here, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
So let's just quickly run through the process then.
We start with the orange mill on the other side of these tanks. Then we go over to the mash tun, which is the big one here in the corner. And then these cylinders are actually our fermentation tanks.
Right.
And we need to be kind of mindful of them. If we know there is coming a low pressure weather over, they are gonna erupt over.
Okay.
So we have to then move them to the on that side where it can the drain.
A lot of low pressure in Iceland.
Yes. And we learned it the hard way that the ceiling became really beautiful the next morning. So
seriously, there was an explosion.
Yeah.
Okay.
They will just bubble all over. So
can we move around to where the milling is taking place?
Yeah.
So this is where the grain is ground up?
Yes.
So there are huge sacks of, how much grain is here? It's a massive
sack of grain. It's about around one ton.
It's a ton of grain.
Yeah. But we go a little bit further than not just only using Icelandic grain. We also own the farm and grow about 80% of the grain ourselves.
Okay.
So, and we have a huge dryer at the farm where it used to be hooked up to oil. 2 years ago, the neighborhood or the surrounding area did drill for a new borehole. So we now dry only on the hot water, meaning that we are one of the greenest whiskies in the world. But you're always going to produce green whiskey in Iceland because of how we have our electricity.
Yes.
So
it's the heat from the hot water that dries the grain.
Yeah, but we have to dry everything straight from the field.
Yeah.
We are harvesting around 30% moisture, while most Europe won't go above 14%.
How long will this take to dry then? Because as you say, there's a massive amount here. There's a ton just in this bag here.
So the dryer takes 6 tons. If I remember right, it will take about 12 hours to dry it down below 14%.
Okay. Can we put some grain in? I'm fascinated to hear and see this process.
He's getting it going.
If I can. All right, your colleague here is doing the milling. So, Gudjon, you're going to be milling this grain. Can you mill some of it now for us?
Sure.
I want to hear what this sounds like and what this looks like. You've got earplugs in. Is that because you're listening to music or because it's very noisy?
Both.
Both, okay. Let's find out how noisy then. So, there's a giant plastic tube that goes up to the top of this machine.
That is actually the downside. So this is the silo where we feed it.
Right.
And then the mill is just here. And it's a hammer mill, so for the ones that really know this. So we use hammer mill because the Icelandic grain is harder than if we would been buying in grain from other places. Then it will be fed up from there and then it will fold down into the buckets.
So it actually goes up the tube and then then comes back down again.
Up the metal tube and then down the plastic coil.
Well, let's see how much we're going to mill just now then. So you've got 6 buttons in front of you and you're about to start this.
Yes. All right, this is the turn on the horizontal. Yeah, lower after snigill. Snigill, it means snail. Or lower after snigill. And then here we start the grain. And now begins.
Okay, so I can see all the grain is now going down into the machine where it's being milled. It's quite satisfying to watch.
I have to watch the meter here, so it doesn't get too fat.
What's this meter measuring?
This is just the resistance. If it's too much grain, it clogs up.
You've got to keep watching it.
Yeah, keep watching it while I feed it, right? Like now.
Okay. Tell me what's happening on the other side of the machine as the grain goes through.
Yeah. So now we're into the part where the grain is coming down. And
a lot of dust coming off there.
That's why we have this filter bag on top, so we minimize the dust that will come into the working area. But yeah, that comes a lot of dust from milling, and that is what you need to be mindful of. There's more explosions have happened because of mill dust in the air than ever ethanol in the air.
Do you get used to the sort of taste and the smell in the air here?
Yeah. And you know it as soon as you walk in, you go like, what did you do?
Yeah.
And they're like, what do you mean? You did something wrong. What did you do? Because you know it instantly if it's the right smell or wrong smell.
Yeah. Well, Gudjon is filling up the machine now. It's now completely full of grain, and he's pouring in a jug at a time, keeping an eye on that meter to make sure that it doesn't jam up or stick. And these buckets into which it's all falling, they'll fill up quite quickly.
But he also notices, okay, then it will just have a little bit here, and then he can see it, how it goes up the coil.
It won't overflow, it'll just build up in the machine.
It'll just build up in the machine.
Okay, well, let's move back round as Gudjon gets on with the milling. Tak for you. Back to the next step of the process. So once that is milled, and once you have the product from there, it goes into here.
So hot water and the milled grain goes into here. This is our mash tun. Here we're breaking up the starch so the yeast can use the sugars to ferment or to change it over to alcohol. So this has to start. This starts every morning, and due to the fact that we have abundance of hot water, we have a heat exchanger, turn on the hot water and the cold water, and the cold water is heated up to 72 degrees. So with no electricity. The only electricity this one needs is for the stirrer on top, and then from the bottom, we need electricity to pump out of it into the fermentation tanks.
How long then will it take from this point until you have a bottle of whiskey?
3 years. More than that. Because of the extent of time from the barrel, that's always going to take more than 3 years. But from mashing until we have a spirit, it's going to take about 4 or 5 days.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what's the oldest bottle that you have then? Because you've been making whiskey here for quite a short time.
We have the first barrels that we made, which were actually made on our old stills, which were homemade stills.
Right.
When we were just trying it out. Is it possible to do it? I'm going to close off so we get a little less noise.
It's a bit noisy in there.
It is a bit noisy in there. So first two barrels that we have, they were actually made, and you can see the column there, which was just on a pot, 70-liter pot. Then we got the Beta, big still, and we have one of those barrels. So we have 3 10-year-old barrels that we are just keeping still. Yes. But what we are bottling as oldest right now is the Distiller's Choice. So we have one of the labels where, and you know it instantly, when you open a cask, you know instantly if it's standard, if it's not good, or if it's something specific, something really good. So we will take those out if someone in the distillery goes like, I really like this smell. I really like this barrel. We will bottle that barrel at cask strength as a Distiller's Choice. And right now we have a 7-year-old from a beer barrel. So 3 years in a virgin cask and then 4 years in a stout cask.
There's a variety of different types of whiskey here, so we'll run through the range. There's a young malt, there's a single malt.
We have a young malt.
Talk me through them.
Yeah. So young malt is basically not whiskey yet. So
what is it?
Whiskey with air quotes.
Okay.
So it's the same product, but it hasn't been in a barrel for 3 years. Then you can't say it's a whiskey, not in Europe.
Okay.
So we use the word young malt for that.
Is that the definition then, 3 years?
3 years
of waiting.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Many other countries as well, but Europe goes 3 years minimum in wooden casks.
Okay.
Yeah. So you have the young malt, which is kind of to use because we get virgin casks for us. We don't have any coopers in Iceland, so we are getting brand new casks in. Then we kind of use the young malt.
It's a different color too. It's redder, yes. It's darker.
Yeah, it's when you have a brand new barrel, it's going to give you much more color. It's much closer to bourbon in color than to what we are used to as single malt.
I must confess, I'm not a whiskey drinker. Well, I'm not a drinker at all these days, but I was never a whiskey connoisseur. So for anyone in the same position, are there whiskey drinkers who enjoy the taste of a young malt? Are there some that prefer
yes.
that taste?
Because it is closer to the bourbons and the American whiskies, okay. much closer. Then we empty that cask, reuse it for the single malt, and then you will have much lighter color than what you had in the young malt. And then we are above 3 years old. For the green label, we have birch. So we add birch staves to the casks. So Icelandic birch. We did try to make a barrel, and it leaks everything.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But that is very Icelandic to use birch.
Yeah, birch is kind of the tree, the only tree we could have possibly used. And we know it was used for like butter boxes back in the day. Like we're talking 200-300 years ago. I did go into a few of the kind of museums this summer when we were traveling around the country, and you will see small whey casks, but they don't tell you which wood is in it. And I'm pretty sure they don't just know. So probably some of them are actually made out of birch.
Okay.
And the birch would have been the only tree you could have used that was grown in Iceland.
Okay.
Because like Reynir and the other trees, we don't see them until after 1850. People start to kind of grow other types of trees in Iceland.
Yes. Let's look at the rest of the range then.
Then we have from a beer barrel, and then we do swaps with the small breweries in Iceland.
Mm-hmm. This is actually called the beer barrel whiskey.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the kind of most standard Scottish that we do is from a sherry cask. Then we have a new product that we released last year, which is Eth, which is 100% Icelandic rye. And now we are kind of starting, we don't know the rye as well in growing it. A lot more research has been done on the barley and growing the barley in Iceland than the rye. So we are still finding the right varieties that is easily used. So that is more tricky than the barley.
Yes. And is a rye whiskey traditionally an American type of whiskey?
Yes.
More American?
It would, and this goes for what you could have grown in the place. So in Scotland, you would grow more of the barley than the rye.
Yes.
And the same for Ireland. You had barley there as well.
So when American visitors come here and they try the rye whiskey, what do they think?
Most of them really like it. Right now, that is also my favorite product. Right now, this is what I drink most of.
Not just now, though. Not right now.
Not right now, no. No, now I'm working. And then the kind of end of what we give people to taste in this area is our smoked version. So it's really typical to smoke whiskey by using peat.
And I should just explain what the name on the label is, and you can tell me how accurate that is and how it relates to what's in the bottle, but this is described as the sheep dung whiskey.
Yeah, because we don't have peat in Iceland. It's such a short way, you're always gonna hit the lava rock. So early on, you don't have so much peat. And if you have peat, you will have ash layers between. So people of Iceland learned pretty quickly that the only burning material they had was to dry the sheep dung and then use it. And essentially it's the same thing as a peat. It just goes through a sheep instead of being in the earth for hundreds of years and under the pressure there. Just goes through a sheep in a few weeks. So
now, someone maybe listening to this will think, well, hang on a minute, that's fine, but that means the whiskey's either going to smell of dung or taste of dung. It does.
It does.
It does.
It's the same. We do the same with the lamb meat and the trout and the salmon. And when you use sheep dung, and this is something we got tested in Scotland for us, and they called us back and just like, how do you get so much of the good smoke's taste? And we're like, how should we know? Well, let's go like, it's the pee from the sheep. We have no idea. So we get more of good smoke flavor compounds when we're using the sheep dung than if you are using peat.
Right. And that doesn't put people off that it's
no.
the excrement of an animal that has basically
no.
given the flavor and the taste.
It never goes into the product itself. What we do is when we're drying the barley, we will add smoke from the sheep dung.
So it's smoke that comes from that particular product.
Yeah.
Okay, that
so
makes
sense. Smoked barley that we use for it.
That makes a bit more sense. Yeah. So that's the range, and of course all the gins as well. There's Brennevin here, which I've not had for a long time, but Brennivín used to be the drink that you would scare tourists with.
Yes, until we started doing good one. So, yeah, Brennivín is kind of, and it is a Scandinavian schnapps.
Yeah.
So, and for us in Iceland and in Denmark, you will have caraway or kummel as the main flavor. In Sweden, you will have dill as the main flavor.
I think Brennivín gets its reputation because it used to be, it still is. It's the drink that people think takes away the taste of the rotten shark, of the haukot.
Well,
people think of it as a kind of mouthwash.
It is gonna, it's gonna depend on who you're talking to. I don't eat the shark myself.
No,
my friend was like, "What are you talking about? I love it." I was like, "No, don't even bring it near me." Yeah, a lot of people today. That is what we do with the tourists. And usually, if people are drinking Brennivín, then we're doing it in Thorin, which is in January. We're kind of celebrating the old months. Mm. So then you will have more of Brennivín in Iceland. In
Thorin. Outside of the month of Thorri, what's the best way to drink Brennivín? Neat? Chilled?
When you chill a drink, just so people understand, is when you chill it, you actually are compacting the flavor, so you won't taste it as much. So for our Brennivín, I would suggest just drink it neat.
Room temperature?
Room temperature. Mix it with, you can mix it with blueberry juice, that is quite good. But I think it's always a little bit trickier mixing it because we have such a strong caraway flavor in it.
And also, in the product range, you'll find some crowberry balsamic vinegar and some malt vinegar as well.
Yeah.
So is this a byproduct of the process?
Yeah, in a way. So then we take the heart that will go to all of the products. We dilute it down so we can feed it to the vinegar mother. And we have a live mother here in the back. And you can see how it's still kind of... It is cloudy. It's because it's... life mother in it. And then we mix this with crowberry juice and a little bit of sugar to do the balsamic vinegar.
Who would have thought that the humble grain that we saw through there can become so many things?
Well, a lot of people back 100 to 200 years ago thought that and realized that.
Yeah.
And then we, of course, as in mass production, we always go for the easier, kind of easier way. Mm-hmm. So this was one of the things, is how can we use the grain as much as possible? How, and we pay more for the Icelandic grain than if we would import grain.
Yeah. You're getting your money's worth, I think.
Yes, we are. and again, it also has to do with this, making sure that farms can be sustainable in Iceland.
Yes.
We want the farming to continue in Iceland.
If someone wants to come and have the experience that I've had and visit the distillery, you are open now. What are your opening hours?
So from 10 to 4, you can drop in. Usually at 2 o'clock, you can actually just take a really like an hour and a half tour where we go through all of the product range. And then at 4 and 6, but you just have to go into our website and then you can find the opening or the tour hours. But if you just want to drop by, that it's between 10 and 4. And then we can, then you can have, like if you just want to have a taste, you don't want to do the full tour, you don't have time for that, then just come in, you do a drop-in, you taste it, you can buy here. If you're traveling, you can also buy it in duty-free. We always point that out because they are a little bit cheaper than us because we need to take all of the alcohol tax in.
Yeah.
They don't.
Yeah. So all of these products, you'll find them at Keflavik?
Yes.
Well, thank you so much. Definitely worth coming along to have a look. We'll put a link up to the page for this distillery here, the Flocky Distillery, on the page accompanying the show from Roof English Radio. But for now, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Roof English Radio, I'm Darren Adam, and you can get in touch with us anytime. We are english@ruv.is.
There's more from Roof English with all the news from Iceland in English at ruv.is/English. Roof English Radio is a daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, Roof.